mobilization services, referrals, and resourcing to veterans and their families who are in crisis. Train providers are available to serve fellow veterans 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, by dialing 211. I'm Heidi Holton. John Bauer will be joining me at about 6:30 this morning, and we are asking you to tell us a story. The question of the week is, we want to know your favorite sign of spring. Maybe you've already seen it, so you've got a story to tell. You can text us. You could text the photo as well to 218-326-1234. Coming up at 9 o'clock this morning, we have Malachi Coons for Headwaters, the Minnesota Mixtape at 10. Beth is on at 1 o'clock. Beth S. will be our host for On the River, and tonight it is Eric Otto for On the River, our volunteer-produced programming. More news is coming up next. It's 6:01.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. There are reports of damage in Myanmar and neighboring Thailand today after a strong earthquake struck central Myanmar. As Michael Sullivan reports, the Thai government says at least three people have been killed.
The U.S. Geological Survey says the 7.7 magnitude quake struck around 12:50 p.m. local time, about 10 miles northwest of the town of Sagang. A magnitude 6.4 aftershock followed about 12 minutes later. Social media shows people cowering on the tarmac at what appears to be the airport in nearby Mandalay, with fallen debris in several parts of the airport's terminal. Additional social media posts from Mandalay show collapsed buildings and debris in the streets. NPR's not confirmed the accuracy of the posts. The quake could be felt here in Chiang Rai, northern Thailand, and as far away as the capital, Bangkok, nearly 500 miles to the south, where there people ran from buildings into the street. For NPR News, I'm Michael Sullivan in Chiang Rai.
A federal judge has ordered several Trump administration officials to save text messages that included military plans to attack sites in Yemen recently. A watchdog group has sued to preserve the messages so they won't be deleted. The Trump administration claims the information is not classified. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says he has revoked about 300 student visas. The Trump administration is tracking down international students at U.S. colleges who have spoken out against the war in Gaza. NPR's Adrian Florido says some of these students have been taken off the streets by federal agents wearing masks.
Rubio is delivering on President Trump's promise to deport non-citizens whose activism he claims supports Hamas terrorism and is anti-Semitic. Trump has taken special aim at universities, saying they're infested with radicalism. He's demanded that schools crack down on protests and is pressuring them with funding cuts. Student activists say this is all about muzzling dissent and free speech, and that these deportation arrests are about spreading terror and punishing students for their political beliefs, and they say that the arrests are unconstitutional.
NPR's Adrian Florido reporting. Federal student loan borrowers are facing an uncertain future. NPR's Corey Turner reports many of them are on the path toward default on their loans.
According to internal Education Department data obtained by NPR, as of March 7th, 9 million student loan borrowers were late on their payments. 4 million were really late, between 91 and 150 days. During the pandemic, borrowers didn't have to worry about defaulting, which happens after 270 days without a payment. But those days are over. In October, the official default clock began ticking again, and with it began a wave of millions of borrowers falling further and further behind. At more than 90 days late, borrowers' credit takes a big hit, and after 270 days, the government can begin to garnish paychecks, tax refunds, and even Social Security. Corey Turner, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR News. The Israeli military says it is striking what it calls terror targets in Lebanon. This comes after two rockets were fired toward northern Israel. The militant group Hezbollah, based in Lebanon, says it did not fire the rockets. The Israeli military says it will act with force against any threat. Israel is warning civilians to move away from Hezbollah strongholds in southern Lebanon near the capital, Beirut. President Trump has signed an executive order that he says will make Washington, D.C., quote, safe and beautiful. NPR's Tamara Keith reports.
For a president, Trump has had an outsized focus on the District of Columbia, complaining Washington suffers from high crime, homelessness, and vandalism. The executive order creates a federal task force to address these concerns and others it doesn't include any local leaders. The order says that as the nation's capital city, Washington should showcase beautiful, clean, and safe public spaces. In a statement, D.C.'s delegate in Congress, Eleanor Holmes Norton, described the order as insulting and pointed to Justice Department statistics showing that in 2024, violent crime in D.C. was at its lowest in more than 30 years. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
A federal judge has ordered the Trump administration to temporarily stop its plans to cut off federal funding for Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. The news agency was launched in 1950 to provide reporting to millions of listeners in countries with repressive governments. The Trump administration has ordered the winding down of the media organization. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Kauffman Foundation, providing access to opportunities that help people achieve financial stability, upward mobility, and economic prosperity regardless of race, gender, or geography. Kauffman.org.
You're listening to Veterans Voices, the first Gulf War.
My name is Teresa Dawson, and I actually was enlisted as a 98 Gulf Russian linguist, which was a really nice job. I was able to enlist full-time, and I was able to get a posh job in Berlin. So I was in Berlin from September 1989 to March 1991. I had been given an opportunity to go to a refresher course down in Munich. We were watching the news, and sure enough, there was this announcement that we were at war with Iraq because it had invaded Kuwait. Must have gone back to Berlin within a week or two of that. Because I remember getting back there, and we were all discussing this, and the possibility of us going because we're intelligence is still there. And it was quite frightening to me, because I thought I'd never have really considered the fact that I could end up having to shoot people. Thankfully, our field station was considered essential to the war support because of the communications that were going through there. You got to remember, this was 1990, right? The wall had fallen, but Russia, Soviet Union at that time, was still trying in vain, I think, to try to survive. But we couldn't let down our guard at that point because it didn't really crumble until 91. So yeah, there was still a Cold War going on while this other war is going on.
Veterans Voices, the first Gulf War, is produced by AMPRS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, and is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Michelle Martin in Washington, D.C. Good morning. In a few minutes, we'll hear about how a new executive order from the president could affect the Smithsonian. But first, we want to talk about President Trump's plan to impose a 25% tariff on imported cars and car parts next week. Unionized auto workers are cheering, but investors who own stock in automakers are less enthusiastic. And people who want to buy a new car might have to pay thousands of dollars more. NPR's Scott Horsley has been watching reaction to the president's tariff announcement this week, and he's with us now. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Michelle.
So President Trump says adding a tax on imported cars and car parts will encourage automakers to build more vehicles here in the United States. Is that likely?
You know, it's possible. That's why members of the UAW are excited about this proposal, even though the union did not support President Trump in last year's election. UAW President Sean Fain notes there is extra capacity at U.S. auto plants if automakers wanted to move jobs out of Mexico or other countries and get around this 25% tariff. But it's not a slam dunk that's going to happen. You know, it took decades to build the North American auto supply network. And Carl Brower, who's an analyst at the shopping site IC Cars, says automakers aren't going to unwind that overnight.
This is an industry that doesn't operate on a weekly or monthly or even yearly time frame. It operates on a half a decade or more time frame.
Of the big three Detroit automakers, General Motors is the most dependent on imported vehicles. GM CEO Mary Barra said a couple months ago her company was not going to spend a lot of money to relocate jobs unless she got some clarity about what the tariff landscape was going to look like. And given the roller coaster we've seen with the president's trade policy over the last few weeks, I'm not sure how big a bet anyone's going to want to place.
I think I saw that GM stock took a beating yesterday. Am I right about that?
Yeah, all the automakers' shares suffered, but GM's took the biggest hit, down more than 7%. Nearly half the cars sold in the U.S. are imported, and the half that are assembled here typically contain some imported parts. So most automakers have at least some exposure to these tariffs. Tesla, the electric car maker led by Elon Musk, relies primarily on American-made parts. Its shares actually went up a little bit on the tariff news.
So President Trump has also said that these tariffs will raise a lot of money for the government. How realistic is that?
The White House estimates these auto tariffs would generate about $100 billion a year for the government, and Republicans are counting on that to help offset the cost of the president's tax cuts. But here's the thing. The U.S. only gets that tariff revenue if automakers continue producing cars and parts in foreign countries. If production actually did shift back to the U.S., there'd be no tariff. Tariffs can either bring jobs home or they can raise revenue, but the more they do with the one, the less they can do with the other.
Okay, let's talk about consumers now. For people who are in the market for a new car right now, what should they expect?
They should probably expect to pay more, unless they get out this weekend and make a deal before these tariffs take effect. Most cars sold in the U.S. are going to face some tariff expense, and Brower says that's going to mean higher prices.
There's really no way the cost of producing any vehicle sold in the U.S. doesn't go up from this. The only variable is how much of that gets passed on to the consumer.
Tariffs are likely to add thousands of dollars to the cost of a typical new car. For some people, that'll be a deal breaker. They might buy a used car, so used car prices could also go up. None of this is helpful when it comes to curbing inflation, which the president likes to say is a big reason he got elected.
That is NPR's Scott Horsley. Scott, thank you.
You're welcome.
President Trump says auto tariffs will bring manufacturing jobs back to the U.S. Our next guest has some doubts. Jim Ross is the mayor of Arlington, Texas, which is home to a large General Motors auto assembly plant. Mayor Ross, what is your perspective on the president's tariff plan?
Well, we have the General Motors assembly plant here in Arlington that manufactures all of the SUVs made by General Motors. So it's an Escalade, Tahoe, Suburban, whatever. It's made here in Arlington. That plant employs about 5,600 employees, and we're concerned about the livelihood of those employees. If the tariffs go into effect, if consumers are paying more money, are they going to be buying less vehicles now? And if they are, how is that going to affect the employees at the assembly plant? So we've written a letter to the two senators here in Texas, Senator Cornyn and Senator Cruz, to ask them to help intervene on behalf of the automotive industry here in Texas. We have yet to hear a response from them, but hopefully we're going to get through this crisis and come out better at the other end.
Yeah, that was what earlier this month you sent that letter along with the mayor of San Antonio. I'm wondering if maybe, because I read that you said that you don't know how tariffs will benefit any Texans. So I'm wondering if maybe you've also reached out to the Trump administration to try and explain how this will benefit people in Texas.
Well, we haven't reached out to the Trump administration directly. I'm a part of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and the mayors of the U.S. Conference has certainly reached out to the Trump administration. We've yet to get a meeting with the Trump administration on this. I know that the U.S. Conference of Mayors, along with mayors in Canada and mayors in Mexico, are meeting next month to discuss tariffs and see what we can do as collective mayors in all three countries to work together like we have done for decades and decades.
You've called this a job-killing threat. What do you envision as the worst-case scenario come April 2nd?
You know, April 2nd, worst-case scenario, the bottom line is consumers are going to be paying for tariffs. And if consumers are paying for tariffs and they can no longer afford vehicles, that means a decrease in the amount of production at our assembly plant. And that is where we're concerned about it being a job-killing threat. Well, you know, if this does ultimately create more jobs, those jobs aren't going to happen overnight. We've spent decades building these plants and getting these things going. General Motors have been here for 60, 70 years. It's gonna take a long time for us to see any benefit from this whatsoever. In the meantime, people are gonna be paying the price. Mexico's not paying the price. Canada's not paying the price. It is the people here in the United States paying the price.
You mentioned the over 5,000 workers at the General Motors plant. Are you worried that people will move, will leave Arlington, and maybe also affect some of the other businesses that are around the plant, like, say, a diner or a clothing store or something like that?
Listen, we have a lot of businesses that rely upon our General Motors employees. But we also have the vendor-type businesses that supply all kinds of parts and materials to the assembly plant. When a vehicle is manufactured, we're not just talking about manufacturing a vehicle from outside the country and bringing it in. We have different components within that vehicle that are manufactured all over the world and brought into the United States. Some are then shipped back and other assembly is done and then brought back. You're talking potentially being able to tariff parts of a vehicle two or three times. That's going to be a tremendous expense that the end consumer is going to be using.
Mayor, I know that mayoral elections in Arlington are nonpartisan, but Arlington is in the 25th congressional district, one that overwhelmingly voted for President Trump. Do residents in Arlington in this district share your concerns about tariffs?
Yeah, they do. You know, I'm very proud of our community. We lie right in the middle of Dallas and Fort Worth. I'd say we're a purple community. We don't consider ourselves blue or red. We just want our streets fixed, our community safe, our citizens to stay employed. And that's what citizens here in Arlington are concerned about. I don't take a position when it comes to national politics, pro or con, one side or the other. I believe that politicians have a duty to do what's best for the community, whether it's a local community like Arlington, the state of Texas, or the federal government.
Mayor, this show is heard in D.C., where there are plenty of Congress people there. You have about 30 seconds to speak to them to try and get some security for your city and for the jobs there.
You know, if I could speak to them directly, I would say, y'all, stop attacking the other side, one way or the other. I don't care about that. Or the community doesn't care about that. And start doing what's best for the communities as a whole. We don't want to hear blame placed on everybody else. We want people to do their job.
That's Mayor Jim Ross of Arlington, Texas. Mayor, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much. Y'all have a great day.
President Trump signed an executive order yesterday directing Vice President J.D. Vance to eliminate, quote, divisive race-centered ideology, unquote, from the Smithsonian Institution, educational and research centers, and the National Zoo. NPR's Chloe Veltman says the order blames the Biden administration for seeking to revise what their successors consider historical truth.
In a public talk just last Sunday about the Smithsonian American Art Museum's achievements and upcoming plans, acting director Jane Carpenter Rock said this.
Given our location here in the nation's capital, with significant levels of federal funding, we are also mindful of the rapid changes swirling around us in the federal government. And we are right now still navigating the impact they will have on the Smithsonian.
Now there's a lot more navigating to be done. A show at the American Art Museum, The Shape of Power, Stories of Race and American Sculpture, is specifically called out in President Trump's latest executive order for promoting, quote, narratives that portray American and Western values as inherently harmful and oppressive. Among other stipulations, the order seeks to prohibit the Smithsonian from receiving funding for programs and exhibitions that, quote, degrade shared American values and divide Americans based on race, and to restore monuments and statues that have been removed from public spaces in recent years in response to growing calls to address racial injustice and the legacy of slavery. This is the latest in a series of recent White House executive orders aimed at rolling back diversity efforts. The Smithsonian Institution closed its diversity office in January. NPR reached out to the Smithsonian, several board members, and members of the museum and academic communities for comment, but received no immediate responses. Chloe Veltman, NPR News.
This is NPR News.
Good morning. It is 6:19. You're listening to Morning Edition. It's from National Public Radio. I'm Heidi Holton. It is March 28th. We've got more news coming up. We are learning about the latest by jazz legend Branford Marsalis. His new full album is Belonging, and it's an interpretation of the 1974 Keith Jarrett record of the same name. Our thanks this morning goes out to Clocko Brewing Company in Grand Rapids. They're continuing their Sunday Funday events each weekend. The last Sunday of the month is open mic with Diddy Wish, where the stage opens up to the community's art, whether it be music, comedy, or anything else. More information at clockobrewing.com. Looking at the weather, we may see some snow or rain today, could see some accumulations. We'll continue to keep you updated. Looks like temperatures in the upper 30s to low 40s for most of the region, could be warmer in the Brainerd area. East winds, very breezy, up to 20 miles an hour, and evening lows tonight in the mid to upper 20s. We would like to thank the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative. They offer workshops in April, including textures in watercolor on April 16th and 17th, and monoprinting on clay April 29th and 30th, and May 1st and 2nd. More information and registration at bagleyarts.org or on Facebook. More news is coming up next.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Moderna, committed to protecting people from COVID-19. The CDC recommends getting a second dose of this season's COVID-19 vaccine for those 65 and older. Doctors can advise about getting a second dose. From American Jewish World Service, committed to the fight for human rights, supporting advocates and grassroots organizations worldwide working towards democracy, equity, and justice at ajws.org. From the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, for nearly a century, supporting efforts to promote a just, equitable, and sustainable society. More at mott.org. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, at macfound.org.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Michelle Martin. How many albums are so good you wouldn't skip a single track? One of today's greatest ambassadors of jazz, Branford Marsalis, fell in love with an album Keith Jarrett made in 1974 with three Scandinavian sidemen. It was called Belonging. Branford Marsalis is taking that appreciation next level. His quartet just released a reinterpretation of every piece from that album.
I figured out when I was 14 years old playing in a cover band is that it's amazing how much better your music can be if you spend your time listening to and stealing from people who are better at it than you are.
I had to chuckle when I read some of the notes that came with the album, where you mentioned how you got into Keith Jarrett's music. Yeah. I had that same kind of eureka feeling that you had, because I remember a friend introduced me to Keith Jarrett, and I was like, wait, how come I don't know about this? Like, what's happening here? Yeah. So could you just tell that story, if you wouldn't mind, about how you got into Keith Jarrett?
Oh, yeah. He made a record called The Kong Concerts that I wasn't particularly fond of. And my pianist at the time and my dear friend Kenny Kirkland said, man, you need to check Keith out. At that time in my life, I embraced that stupid adage, first impressions are lasting impressions. And my mind was made up, and then he slipped the headphones on my head on a plane. And I started listening, and I'm like, who is this? Oh, it must be Keith Jarrett, because he's been selling it. Man, this is pretty good. And then when he reached to take the headphones back, I covered my hands over the headphones and didn't allow him to. And he just started to laugh. He says, man, that's what you get for being stubborn. I told you. And I bought all of that stuff.
So tell me a bit about how you and the quartet went about it. You clearly didn't sit there and transcribe pieces from the album. Number one, this is jazz, so that's not going to happen. But the tracks...
Don't kid yourself. That happens all the time.
Does it? Okay, well, I stand corrected.
There's a cottage industry out there with literal solos being worked out and regurgitated and still called improvisation.
Oh,
but
dear.
I digress.
Oh, dear. Okay. But these are not note for note the originals. They are definitely... you and the quartet, you're doing your thing.
Yeah, well, we have a different sonic perspective than those guys would have had in 1974. I grew up in New Orleans and grew up singing songs and clanging pencils on a fence, singing two-way Pocky Way. The guys in his band are clearly great musicians, but I feel comfortable in saying that some Norwegian guys born in the 1940s, weren't in a Southern University-type marching band and didn't grow up listening to R&B with the regularity that we did. So we have all these sonic perspectives that we can bring to the music, so we don't have to spend much time trying to alter or change the original songs or the construction of the songs, because how we interpret those songs will be automatically different than the way that they would interpret them.
So let's listen to an example. I'm just going to play one of my favorites, the Keith Jarrett piece, The Wind Up, fun piece. Let's play a little bit of the original. Okay, now let's play some of my new favorite. This is your version of The Wind Up. I feel the New Orleans.
Yeah.
Am I right?
And the drummer's from Philly. That's what's okay. Wild about it. But he spent 2 months in New Orleans working on a film. Because he said, oh, man, you're always bragging about your raggedy-ass city. Well, I'm going to go live down there for 2 months. And 2 weeks into it, he's like, this is the most amazing city in the world. I said, well, in America, for sure. I don't know about the world, but he loved it, and he learned a lot of stuff. And when we play certain songs, it does have that kind of New Orleans romp feel to it. Piano player Joey. Joey's from New Rochelle, New York, and lives in Durham, North Carolina. Eric Rivas is from Fresno, but he lives in Los Angeles. But he did live in New Orleans for 2 years. So all the little New Orleans cues, I mean, those two guys know him for sure. So like at towards the end of the song in the middle, we have this song called The Second Line, and the trumpet player plays this phrase. And everybody has to go, hey!
Yes.
And I played it, and they said it. It wasn't one of those things where I scripted and said, okay, guys, when I play this lick, you guys say, hey. It was instinctive. They just went there.
I love it. Had you ever had a chance to work with Keith Jarrett?
No, I've never even met Keith.
Oh, wow.
People say, oh, do you think that's strange? I said, well, I haven't met Thelonious Monk either. Or Charlie Parker or Beethoven. But I still listen to the music and I still study things. The songs are hard to play. I will say that. I'm glad I didn't try to do this 15 years ago. I think we would have failed, or it just wouldn't have been very good. We would have succeeded to a degree, but the songs have beautiful melodies and great emotional depth, and you have to be a mature musician to grasp the emotion in each song and tailor the sound of your instruments and of your group to reproduce the emotion that's required. But for us, I mean, we've been dealing with all these different styles and strains of music since this particular iteration of the band started in 2009. So we didn't have to talk it through. We just had to play it.
That is Branford Marsalis. His quartet just released a reinterpretation of Keith Jarrett's 1974 album, Belonging. Branford Marsalis, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Michelle. It was a pleasure to talk with you again.
This is NPR News.
President Trump's cuts to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has some scallop fishermen facing stricter regulations on their catching limits.
Some are welcoming the cuts, saying that the government has been their downfall. There's too many regulations, and I don't share that opinion.
We'll talk smaller scallop catches at the dock on All Things Considered from NPR News.
UAW You can hear All Things Considered coming up this afternoon. It's at 4 o'clock here on People Powered KAXE. It's 6:29. I'm Heidi Holton.
And I'm John Bauer. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's a beautiful morning.
You've got the low voice going there.
Oh, husky.
Yeah.
That's what happens in the morning. You can't wake up with the perfect voice.
Right. The Furlan Husky coming forward. It is March 28th. And coming up, we'll have National Native News. We do have a winter weather advisory. This is a little confusing because it looks like it's for some of our area. Yeah, it happens on the weekends, man. It is mixed precipitation, could see snow and sleet, accumulations of up to 4 inches. That's from 10 a.m. today until 1 a.m. Saturday. And this is including a lot of the regions. Looking like the icy part of this might be the troubling one, especially on the roads. So cloudy skies, highs in the upper 30s to low to upper 40s, and breezy east winds 10 to 20. Rain could turn freezing this evening, 26 to 29. Slight chance of snow again tomorrow, mostly cloudy, highs in the mid to upper 30s.
Okay, Ma Nature, come on. It's that time.
Yes, it is. It is March.
That time of uncertainty.
Yeah.
But yesterday was a beautiful day.
Yeah. It was great.
Went to Duluth, took JoJo on the boardwalk.
Oh, wow.
We just cruised the city. It was so much fun.
That's great.
And JoJo's at my feet this morning. She loves coming in the radio in the morning. We would like to thank Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs and pool tables and saunas. Learn more online at hotspringhottubmn.com.
Coming up on National Native News, in Canada, an unknown murder victim of a Winnipeg serial killer has now been identified. We have that story coming up from Dan Karpinchak. Stay tuned for that. At 9 o'clock this morning, Malachi Coons. He is your host for Headwaters and Minnesota Mixtape that starts at 10 o'clock. Lots of things going on today. We're going to be talking with Julie Crabb later before 9 o'clock. Our mama pop culture. She's going to tell us about some of the things she's been seeing, whether it's movies or TV shows. We'd love to hear from you. Weigh in by texting us at 218-326-1234. We may have a, rainy, snowy couple of days, so it might be nice to know what's going on.
Right? Yeah, it would.
You could watch. Let's see. Yes, text us at 218-326-1234. We'll bring you the talkback segment coming up before 7 o'clock.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, an unknown murder victim of a Winnipeg serial killer has now been identified. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, an unknown murder victim of a Winnipeg serial killer has now been identified. Ashley Shingoose was identified as the fourth victim of a serial killer who murdered Indigenous women in 2022. More from Dan Karpinchak.
Until she was identified, she was known only as Buffalo Woman. Now investigators say she was Ashley Shingoose, a 31-year-old woman from the St. Teresa Point Anishinaabe Nation. Shingoose was the first victim of serial killer Jeremy Skibitski. Officials traveled to her home community this week to break the news to her family. Investigators had searched for years to identify her. They interviewed Skibitski in prison and found a piece of clothing in his apartment that belonged to Shingoose. DNA testing confirmed that it was hers. Now officials, including Premier Wab Kanu, have pledged support for a new search of the nearby Brady landfill. Premier Kanu also addressed the people of Manitoba.
I hope that you recognize that through the ups and downs, we are moving closer to a province and to a Canada that is going to be safer, because there is going to be more trust, there's going to be more cooperation, there is going to be more shared interest for everybody, no matter where you come from in this province. And you're seeing all leaders from every level of government, including police leadership, coming forward to say this matters and we're going to work together.
The police chief, Gene Bauer, says the decision not to search for the remains of two of the victims had an impact on the families in the community. He said, while the past cannot be undone, we can learn and know what needs to be done. He says talks will begin soon about a humanitarian search for Shingoose's remains. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchak.
In a rare move, six Michigan tribes have withdrawn from discussions on a federal permit for the Line 5 tunnel, which the Canadian company Enbridge wants to build under the Straits of Mackinac. Interlochen Public Radio's Izzy Ross has more.
To build the pipeline tunnel, Enbridge needs a permit from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Six tribes in Michigan had been part of that process as cooperating agencies. That includes the Bay Mills Indian community. President Whitney Gravel says they heard last week that the Corps anticipated fast-tracking the permit under President Donald Trump's Energy Emergency Declaration. Gravel says that was the final straw in a process the tribes already thought was flawed.
What we saw time and time again is that no matter how much evidence we collected, no matter what type of comments we provided, all of that was disregarded by the Corps.
The Corps' Detroit District says it is still reviewing the tribe's letter to withdraw and that new procedures under Trump's executive order will be posted publicly. An Enbridge spokesperson said in an email the company welcomes, quote, constructive dialogue and engagement, unquote. Line 5 carries oil and natural gas liquids from Superior, Wisconsin to Sarnia, Ontario. Right now, it runs underwater across the Straits of Mackinac in Michigan, about 4 miles along the lake bed. The underground tunnel would house a new section of the pipeline there. Debbie Chisawer is an attorney with Earth Justice, one of the nonprofit law firms representing Bay Mills. She echoed concerns about the Corps' environmental review.
One example is that the Corps interpreted the scope so narrowly that it wasn't going to consider oil spills as a potential environmental impact. And we all know that it's not a matter of if a pipeline is going to spill oil, but when.
The Corps has said assessing the risk and impact of oil spills falls outside its authority and should be handled by a different federal body. If it issues the tunnel permit, the tribes will likely challenge the decision in court. For National Native News, I'm Izzy Ross.
And a disclosure, Enbridge supports this program. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak.
It is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. You hear it here on KAXE, and it's made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. One of the programs that we choose to bring to you as part of this service for Northern Minnesota. Right now, we've got a news story I wrote this week on our Unplugged series about how we pick our programs and what, you know, kind of the behind the scenes of how this whole thing comes together, and that we choose what happens on the air all the time. No corporation, no government is telling us what to do. Mm-hmm. And we're creating a broadcast by people who live here for people who live here. So check out that Unplugged article, especially in lieu this week of public media hitting the news. You really understand what the importance of a small, independent rural station is like KAXE. We need your help. You can just share that article if you would.
I was listening, by the way, at the Duluth Airport to KAXE yesterday, loud and clear, hearing you and Sarah talking about those very facts. It was very, very good. Made me proud. I want to thank the Grand Rapids State Bank, committed to serving Grand Rapids area for over 110 years. More at grsb.bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
We have a album of the week. I know that's not a big surprise, but even this, no corporation tells us what album to choose.
No.
It's Charlie Crockett.
Charlie Crockett.
You
Lonesome
know Charlie
Drifter.
Crockett, right?
Yep.
It's his 15th album in 9 years.
Charlie
Holy Crockett.
Cow.
Yeah. It is called Lonesome Drifter, comes on the heels of his Grammy nominated 2024 album, The $10 Cowboy. He channels kind of this 70s Nashville country music with one foot set in 2025. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
What did we choose? Never No More. It's Charlie Crockett.
Commerce Street in Blandford. Nickels and dimes. Easy money. Never no more will I be all alone. Never no more will I just stay at home. Because I got me somebody that makes me happy when I'm blue. Never no more will I cry for her. Never no more will I sit by for her. Because I got me somebody that makes me happy when I'm blue. Sure do. Take a solo out. Come on now. That town just like we used to do. In all of that time I was so blind I couldn't see through. All I saw was blue. Never no more will I see her. Never no more now that I'm free of her. Because I got me somebody that makes me happy. Yes, I got me somebody, yeah, that makes me happy when I'm blue, whenever I am
you think. That's a very 70s vibe, didn't it?
Yeah, no kidding. It is almost like country jazz too. It was very interesting. He's got how many albums out?
15.
Holy, in 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
Cranking them out.
Yep. Mary from Castle Lake, good morning to you. She says good morning to John and Pup, and sent a couple of little cute emojis of dogs.
I got the best.
It's for you, Jojo.
Yeah. Okay. If you're just getting up, we're talking a winter weather advisory from 10 a.m. Friday to 1 a.m. on Saturday with mixed precipitation, snow and sleet accumulations up to 4 inches. Thunderstorms are possible. Includes parts of Itasca, St. Louis, Aiken, Cass, Beltrami, Clearwater, and Crow Wing counties. And today, rain lightly, afternoon cloudy with highs 39 to 48. Breezy, east winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Rain could turn to freezing, you know, whatever you want to call it tonight, because lows are 26 to 29.
Show fizzle or
shadizzle.
Shadizzle.
And then Saturday, slight chance of snow, mostly cloudy with highs in the mid to upper 30s. Northeast winds up to 20 miles per hour. Evening lows in the 20s. And then looking way ahead to Sunday, mostly cloudy, a slight chance of snow, attempts in the upper 30s to 40s, and northeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. And the question of the week, what signs of spring are you looking forward to?
I bet, can't you, it's going to happen again, the peepers.
I know.
Don't you love that?
I was just thinking that the other day. Yeah,
they're going to wake up out of that ice.
They just come cranking out of there and they're just fired up.
I love it.
Have you been hearing any sights of robins yet?
Yeah.
You have?
We've seen some actually here at KFC, so we'll keep our eyes open.
I haven't seen that first one yet.
This morning. Lots of folks posting and letting us know about their favorite signs of spring. I got to have a little spoonful of the first maple sap last night as we're boiling it down. Holy cow, is it good. Sort of smoky.
Wow. Mm.
Let us know. Text us 218-326-1234. The Reclaiming and Advancing Leech Lake Youth Coalition is holding an interactive conversation. It's called Changing the Narrative on Mental Health and Suicide, Monday, March 31st at 6 p.m. at Walker Hackensack Akeley School. Conversation also be Thursday, April 3rd at 6 p.m. at the Onagam Community Center. For more information and to register, visit the community education page on the Walker Hackensack Akeley School District website.
And author and forensic psychologist Frank Weber will visit Bemidji Public Library tomorrow at 10:30. He'll talk, will include a lie detector demonstration.
Would you do
that? Whoa. Sure. I mean, unless they, well, I don't know what you, I don't know if lie detector people can know what the questions are. No, I suppose they can't. They totally,
you mean before you get hooked up?
Yeah.
Right.
Like, if you know, have you ever stolen candy from a candy store? I could live with that, you know, but there are probably some.
You'd say you could live with that lie?
I would say no, I haven't.
But you have?
No.
Oh.
Never okay. Stolen. I'm just trying to think of questions that might be a little bit hard, sensitive, you know?
Okay.
I don't know what they are. Lie detector test.
Well, yeah, that's the
I
kind
know,
of
I love it.
And,
you know. I always wonder, can you be so nervous that the lie detector test beats you? You know, your heart gets pumping, like when you go into the doctor's office and they take your blood pressure, do you get nervous? I do.
Yeah.
Skyrockets. I said, that's not my blood pressure.
I know.
In 2 days, it'll be, for 1 day or when I get out of here, it'll be perfect. Well, okay, Sonny, we're going to make that on your chart.
We have our talk back segment coming up next. On the Friday morning show, we'll be talking sports. Apparently, it was a big day in sports yesterday.
Apparently.
Twins. What, was it not good?
They lost their opener.
Aw.
That's not good, but, you know, there's 161 games left.
Oh, my God.
But there were some same little things that happened in the past.
Oh, Mary's out on the road. She said they're not good today.
What? Really?
Yeah.
So they're getting something over west.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Thanks for tuning in and connecting with us. It keeps us going, and we are getting ready for the
talk back segment of the morning
show.
Yeah,
let's do it.
All right. We love to hear from you. You can email us comments at kaxe.org or simply text us 218-326-1234.
Lori from Minneapolis donated online and she commented, I am so impressed with your news coverage. Your journalism is top quality. I also love the book and arts reviews as well as phonology reports. I always learn something new. What you are doing is absolutely vital to the local community, but also to the entire state. Thank you so much.
And we got a text Saturday night. I can't imagine worse music than what I've heard tonight after dark. What the heck is wrong with you?
After Dark is our new Saturday night program after Green Cheese from 9 to midnight, featuring styles of music that you don't usually hear here, like punk and metal and R&B and hip hop and more. And this Saturday, Mark Clabundy is bringing us disco and dance music.
Oh.
So it sometimes may not be everybody's cup of tea, but new people are coming in and hosting shows. It's Saturday night, you can just like shake it up a little bit.
So, somebody might not like disco. I mean, I don't even know if that's possible.
Do you remember Disco Duck? That was
that was a
New York Times clue recently in the crossword puzzle.
Disco Duck.
Yes. Rick somebody.
Mm. And we got a comment on Facebook post from Miriam in Bemidji. She said, thank you, KAXE. New team, news team, excellent reporting and journalistic work. You can find local news stories, including the latest on the Minnesota Senate District 6 special election at kaxe.org. And again, I heard all that news too, and it's fantastic.
We've got the Up North Report coming up a little after 7. Monica from Turtle River texted Wednesday morning, that song People Pleaser was too loud, all capitals, and too trashy, all capitals, for a morning song. We had to shut the radio off. Yikes. Play that in the afternoon.
Tammy from Bemidji emailed us about Wednesday's morning show, too. Great show this morning. Good interviews and great conversation. Thanks for all you do to make our mornings brighter.
And Troy from Cornell, Wisconsin, donated this week. And he said, KAXE enriches my life daily, and it brings inspiration and hope. What a treasure.
Whoa.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Coming up, we'll learn about some of the live music in the region. We've got the set list with Malachi Coons.
This is The Setlist on KAXE, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are looking at Friday and Saturday, March 28th and 29th, with shows in Aiken, Duluth, Grand Rapids, and Bemidji. First up, a duo called Sawtooth Witch will be at Sampaguita in Aiken Friday night at 6 p.m. With Pat Doc Dougherty on guitar and Haley Fleming on violin, both sharing vocals, they make acoustic dance rock and formally released music under the name They Self. The show begins at 6 p.m. It's Friday night, Sawtooth Witch at Sampaguita in Aiken. At 7:30, alt-rock singer-songwriter Mary Bew is celebrating the release of her new album at Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth. Bew will be performing with a full band behind the new album The Wildness of Living and Dying, which showcases her intimate and intense songwriting. Opening the show is folk singer and violinist Galen Lee. It's this Friday at Duluth at Sacred Heart. On Saturday, Lonesome Dan Case is part of a new duo playing at Rapids Brewing in Grand Rapids at 6 p.m. Kismet Rendezvous features old-timey singer Don Tanner alongside Lonesome Dan, playing a mix of Americana and blues. It is Saturday night in Grand Rapids. And the final featured show of the set list is jam funk band Kitschy Boogie at Headwaters Music and Arts in Bemidji. The group features Shane Corning and Jason Dowell on guitar and vocals, Doug Quance on drums, and Papa Steve Ross on bass. The show is a benefit for Headwaters Scholarship Programs, and their school band will open the evening at 6 o'clock. Kitschy Boogie at Headwaters Music and Arts this Saturday. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and we'll post the latest edition every Wednesday at KAXC.org.
You can hear Malachi coming up at 9 o'clock for Headwaters, and that's followed by Minnesota Mixtape at 11 or 10 o'clock. And, of course, we get our slice of green cheese every day on Headwaters at 9:45, so you're going to want to tune in for that.
I want to thank the Timberlake Lodge in Grand Rapids, offering an endless soup and salad bar for lunch and burgers and hand-cut steaks for dinner. More at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
Let's see. We are expecting there's a winter weather advisory that's remaining in effect from about 10 a.m. this morning until 1 a.m. Saturday. Mixed precipitation expected. Total snow and sleet accumulations could be up to 4 inches. So be careful out there. There's going to be a lot of wind. Right now we are seeing temperatures in the, 35 in Grand Rapids, 33 in Hibbing, 34 in Bemidji and Aiken and Park Rapids. And it looks like Deer River, 34 as well.
The My Neighbor to Love Coalition hosts an open house at a new housing complex in Brainerd Sunday, March 30th from noon to 2, celebrates with the families who now have a home for their own at 620 Northwest 3rd Street in Brainerd. Wow, what a thrill. Have a home of your own.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of quiet today.
Yeah, there were some things that during the week I was like, oh, I'm going to have to talk to John about this. And I'm trying really, can you hear the
I can hear you grinding.
The gears and the smoke coming out of my ears here? It's going to take a while for me to wake up and remember stuff.
Did we get a couple like texts?
Oh, we did. Thank you. Thank you very much. We heard from Mary. She said the roads aren't bad yet. And then the Walker, Hackensack, Akeley girls took 5th in state for basketball. Congratulations to them. We had a lot of fun on Wednesday. We got to talk with Gabby Findey. She broke the school record for, I think, three. She's been on the varsity team since 7th grade. 3,000.
Oh, wow.
Baskets. She signed to BSU, and such a great conversation. You know what that's like, young athletes, about they know what their role is as a leader. Mm. And that story is going to be available later today at our website at kaxe.org. Elaine says she saw the red buds of the rhubarb leaves breaking through the earth. Wow. That sounds good.
Holy cow. Shouldn't we start seeing some tulips maybe busting through?
The kids, in the more southern parts of the state during phenology had reported some of those sorts of things, even dandelion and mosquito in Northfield. So things are changing, but as we know, we've got a couple of months to kind of wait it out where we fluctuate between seasons here.
Yeah, our summer doesn't really kick in until May, I think. April can be can be ugly as well, but we've had wonderful summers. We'll take it. Want to thank the Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital. Jeez, home to an inexperienced OBG. What can I start over?
Yeah, tighten up the choppers.
Let's go. I think my choppers are floating. Want to thank Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital, home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more at granditasca.org.
There we go. This is 91.7 KEXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KEXE.org. Today's the last day for you to donate your gently loved vinyl for our Record Store Day sale that's coming up Saturday, April 12th at the Rail River Folk School in Bemidji from 9 to 1. It's an hour earlier. Sarah made a point of this yesterday because people do line up.
Yeah, really?
Before the opening. We've usually opened at 10, but we are opening at 9 this year.
It's kind of like a Black Friday thing. Doors open, they just scurry to the box.
So you can drop off, though, your Gently Loved vinyl donations. Today is the last day in Grand Rapids or Bemidji at our studios.
I have some in the storage building I'm going to bring to you. Well,
today's the day. Sorry.
Today's the day.
We're going to cut it off, John. We're not going to let you donate after this. You do have some in your
storage? Yeah, I have some really, really nice ones for sure.
You sure you want to give them up? Do you have a record player in your house?
I used to have so many. No, I don't have a record player in the house.
I could just see you having a... Really?
Yeah. Well, quite a while ago. Just, you know, when they made the turn to CDs.
Oh, okay. But it's the cool thing to have one.
I know, but I'm not cool.